Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David For on Friday, the 30th day of August. I'm recording at 9:48 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. And this being the 30th of August, it is the last trading day of August. Now, I'm going to start with some bullet points on this big picture long-term audio. And the first is not a long-term comment, but I will say that I feel less bearish today than I did a month ago. Now, it's important to say that because sentiment inevitably deteriorates as markets come down, and we've certainly seen that in some of the general comments that have been issued by some commentators. Now, why would I feel less bearish here, and especially when Bloomberg, I think, pointed out today that on a global basis, global average basis, that stock markets have fallen the most since May 2012. Well, the first point is that it has corrected valuations somewhat. And a lot of markets were extremely overextended, as you know. And if you want just a quick check on that, just look at Owen's comments on a number of autonomies yesterday, Thursday. And he reviewed, at least a dozen really household name global autonomies. And all of them had pulled back to their 200-day moving averages. So this brought them back to a much more interesting area. It doesn't mean that they're going to go rushing back up here from that level. I don't think that they will in all probability, although a few might. Now, overall, the choppy environment that we have been seeing here is something that Fuller Money has been predicting for really a number of months. And you know the reasons for that, because we had a maturing bull market cycle, which actually began back in the first quarter of 2009. But the important point in more recent times is that back in November 2012, we had an oversold condition and launched a very strong markets, global stock markets launched a very, very strong rally. And I feel we monitored that all the way up here. That became overextended, leading to the more choppy environment that we are seeing here right now. Now, another point that I want to introduce at this stage is that there's been, of course, a lot of talk about the currency devaluations or currency weakness, I should say, that we've seen in a number of the Asian countries. And particularly the ASEAN sector, and also in India. Now, the setup for that, which again is a theme that's often been discussed by Fuller Money, was when Japan, late last year, announced that it was going to devalue its currency, something that Fuller Money strongly approved of, because the yen had been much too strong for far too long. But it was also a wake-up call for many of those Asian economies. Actually, all of them have seen their currencies weaken and have encouraged a weaker trend in their currencies, except for China, interestingly, which has a managed currency and has maintained its firmness. Now, the devaluation of those currencies is traumatic for people who have invested, particularly foreign investors who have bought into the ASEAN and Indian economies. But understandably so, because they way underperformed in U.S. dollar terms. But let's look at the flip side of what this is also going to mean. First, These countries are now raising interest rates, short-term interest rates, and that is a little bit of a headwind for their global GDP growth. But their currencies, they don't want their currencies to weaken any further, and they are currently at very competitive levels in most instances. Now, that will help their economies over the medium and potentially longer term overall. So, while there's an awful lot of bearish sentiment regarding those markets, they look really quite interesting. Take a look at the Indian banks index, for instance. India raised its short-term rates to 7.5%, but the banks index is very, very cheap. It's taken the brunt of the pressure here. And the price earnings ratio is down to 9.1, and they yield about 2% here right now. The yield's certainly not outstanding, but it's a very oversold sector overall. It may take it time to recover. It probably will, but it's far too low to sell and is in an eventual recovery situation. Now, moving on, one of the most important themes here is the U.S. economy and its phenomenally competitive position in here right now. And the three reasons, and I've mentioned them many times here, so I'll be very quick on this, very brief on this, is first the accelerating rate of technological innovation. This is probably the biggest theme, certainly at Fuller Money, and I think it's going to be the biggest theme for global stock markets for decades, actually. That's something I'd love to talk about at greater length, but I won't. I'll try not to abuse you in that sense. Now, the other big theme in favor of the U.S. economy overall is energy costs, very competitive energy costs, not because of anything that the government has done, quite the opposite. It's because the entrepreneurial, inventive U.S. economy invented fracking and has benefited from a huge increase in domestic oil production, and particularly in domestic natural gas production. And natural gas, I think, is on its way to eventually becoming the most important fossil fuel, replacing crude oil as the most important fossil fuel. Now, the third factor there are the autonomies. And on those are the corporate autonomies, of course, so named because they have outgrown their domestic markets. They're big global players, and there are more autonomies in the United States than in any other country by a considerable margin. Now, the U.S. economy has a massive opportunity for productivity growth over the next number of years. And it's important to emphasize this because, you know, people look at the data and it's sort of choppy and mixed in here. Will Bernanke commence tapering next month or not? And you look at the rather modest economic news and it's sort of viewed as an on-again, off-again thing. Bottom line here is that on the basis of the benchmarks, the economic benchmarks, particularly in terms of employment that Bernanke set, it's hard to make the case for commencing the tapering of quantitative easing in September. However, there is an awful lot of political pressure to go ahead and do just that. So that may happen, but if it does happen, it will be as a consequence of that political pressure rather than the fact that the U.S. economy is doing so outstandingly well. A lot of U.S. corporations, however, are doing outstandingly well, and I think that that's going to continue for a very long time. Inevitably, there are fluctuations in growth and earnings and so on, but the bedrock positions here that are helping them are not going to go away. And the most important of those, by far, is this accelerating rate of technological innovation, which the United States actually leads. Its technology lead has actually increased in recent years. Remember, it had shrunk for a while in the 1990s. We could see that happening. There were some earlier periods where that had occurred, but relative to individual countries such as Japan, before Japan ran into economic troubles as its bull market bubble burst some time ago. But the accelerating rate of technological innovation means that the actual productivity of U.S. companies can be increased as never before. And I should also say that it's not just U.S. economies, because other countries also are in a position, other developed economies are in a strong position to develop from this trend. And those, well, the most important of those, I think, will certainly be Germany. And the UK is already benefiting from those technologies, and indeed a number of the European, more developed European economies, particularly some of the Northern European economies, will do that. Japan and also South Korea, that's the next most likely developed country to be benefiting from these technological developments, which will increase productivity so much. For instance, let me just give one example, which applies to Europe and not the United States. And Owen mentioned this to me earlier in the week. He said there, after seeing an item that, for instance, plastic bags are now cheaper to manufacture in Europe. And as there are a number of other products, but one of them that was mentioned was electronic razors. Why? When previously these were sourced out to Asian countries, and particularly China? Well, because the process has been completely automated. So there is minimal manual labor actually involved. And then Nike, the shoe giant, which I discussed yesterday, and Owen had some interesting data on Nike, is working on an automated shoe manufacturing process. Now, for many years, they've outsourced that to countries all over the globe. But increasingly, shoes, we will see. This is not going to happen all overnight. It's a gradual process, but more of that manufacturing, automated manufacturing, will be back in the U.S. That avoids the transport costs. They're obviously a lot closer to their main consumers, since the United States is the biggest consumer society, but they can also be manufactured automatically in other countries as well, and that's going to happen. So this whole process, I could go on and on on the subject, but the time is short, and I won't, but I think you get the picture. The flip side of that is that it will pressure governments, because unemployment will increase. We're not going to get the type of job creation that we've seen in other periods throughout the last century. In particular, it's just not going to happen. The automation process is something that's going to run for the indefinite future here overall. Now, so where are we in terms of the overall global stock market cycle, having run through those bullet points that I wanted to begin with? And we are in a late stage of what has been a good cyclical bull market overall. I've already mentioned, I mentioned daily here for several months, the increased valuations, which are a headwind for global stock markets. We have also seen deteriorating economic situations in the Middle East in recent months, not least in Egypt, and the Syrian conflict is also potentially quite serious. But there are a lot of countries that are either indifferent to hostile to Western interests. Iran is an obvious example. And there is enough uncertainty there, and there have been enough military scares. For instance, this week we've had all the talk of a coalition going in and using cruise missiles to bomb military installations in Syria. Well, I hope it doesn't happen because I think it would be a bit rash. They should be working more through the frustratingly slow and inadequate diplomatic channels rather than getting engaged in regime change and other adventures which can have too many unintended consequences here overall. But the net effect is that that has undermined confidence here in recent weeks, and it has certainly pushed stock markets lower, which has helped to improve their valuations somewhat going forward. It's also created a risk that we shouldn't really be facing if and would not be facing if we did not have these problems in the Middle East, but those in concern crude oil prices. Now, if we were to see spikes, particularly a significant spike taking Brent crude oil, which is already at a modest headwind to a more significant headwind in Asian manufacturing companies, for instance, which have seen their currencies fall really quite sharply in recent months. But if we were to see a spike in Brent crude, I don't think this is going to happen. But it's not impossible under the Middle Eastern circumstances. You get Brent going up above $120, and that will certainly set a lot of yellow warning lights flashing. And you approach anything like the $140 level, and it wouldn't last long, but anything even close to that level would be a complete game changer. And that would cause the corrections that I've been talking about and Owen's been talking about in this choppy market environment, it would turn those into bear markets, I think, without question. That has always happened in the past when we have seen those big spikes in the price of crude oil. Well, why shouldn't it happen? Well, because there's plenty of production around here right now, and I also think that the Saudis would increase production. And I also think that the United States would release some of its strategic reserves. And certainly all oil producers would try to up their production overall. And of course, we're also in an era where not only the fracking that I talked about in terms of the United States, but that is spreading more widely. It's not spreading fast enough. In my opinion, we certainly need to see more fracking, I believe. And yes, there are environmental concerns, but the situation in the United States with all of its gas production, it's actually reduced the amount of pollution that's thrown into the atmosphere. That doesn't reverse the climate change risk here, clearly, but an even bigger risk, I think, could be if we didn't weren't using the fossil fuels, we would see not just a global recession, we'd see a global depression, and the social consequences of that would be appalling. And as I've said before, over the last few years, we need a little bit of luck in terms of the climate change situation. And the luck that I'm talking about is that the situation does not get out of hand. It's certainly not out of hand today. But that technologies improve sufficiently quickly so that we can not only stop the increase in atmospheric pollution, but also considerably reduce it. I tend to be a long-term optimist, but I think there are some realistic reasons, certainly as part of the overall technological acceleration process and the importance of this issue, that it will be a problem that we will see reduced over the next 10 to 20 years and beyond. So, what actually happens? Where are we in the cycle? I think we'll see these markets in a lengthy, choppy, ranging phase here. And in terms of, I've often said that I don't think that it will be a bear market for the United States, and therefore a good many other countries will not experience a bear market. We have to be careful of our definitions. I've never been happy with the 20% definition of a bear market. That's just a big correction, in my opinion. But bottom line here, what's a bad bear market? Something like we saw in 1970, certainly what we saw in, I beg your pardon, we saw in the year 2000, I'm referring to the year 2000, and an even bigger one in the 2008 downward turn. I've seen a lot of bear markets, so sometimes I throw in extra ones there in these discussions. But in comparison to 2000 and 2008, I don't think we will see anything like that, provided that outside chance of a serious spike in Brent oil does not actually occur. So I expect more choppy ranging overall, that's a lengthy process which actually enables valuations to come down over time, because more companies will continue to increase their profitability, and the global economy is growing, albeit slowly, and as those valuations decrease, and as we get out of what is a short-term, rather tense energy situation in here, I think that the corporate outlook will become stronger and stronger as we move into the latter part of this particular decade and beyond. And I think this is a long, choppy pause before we see tangible evidence before the end of this decade of the next secular bull market. And that's a very long-term projection. Okay. What about long-dated government bonds? I'm going to have to hurry up here, given the time that I spent on equities. These are in a bear market. In a bear market, most of the surprises are in line with the actual bearish trend. That will mean yields rising for bond markets. It's a very dangerous environment. I would not be seeking any kind of haven in the global bond market. There will be inevitably choppy action in the overall trend. In other words, we will see I expect a secular bear market in these global bonds. That's what usually happens when you end a secular bull market, and we have certainly done that in 31 years. It certainly was a secular bull market in global bonds, but The point I was starting to make was that even in that secular bear market of rising long-dated government bond yields, there will be periods of many months and sometimes over a year where you see large reactions and ranging pauses here where yields actually come down. But overall, the cost of those rises is considerable. A number of investors are going to choose to ride that out because they know that as the bonds reach maturity, that they will get their capital back. Yes, you will, with the exception of some perhaps very questionable speculative bonds, which I'm not talking about. I'm talking about US Treasuries, I'm talking about UK gilts, I'm talking about German bunds, Australian government bonds, Japanese government bonds, and so on. Now, my point is that you can ride those to maturity, but that can easily, as the rates go up, your capital values are moving lower on at least a medium-term basis in those long-term issues, and that's an unattractive proposition because it limits your flexibility, and I don't think many people want to be in that position. If you want to stay with those long-dated government bonds, you want to be in the short end and just keep rolling that forward. And obviously, a good many people are going to do just that. In terms of currencies, I've already had a partial discussion about. I wouldn't expect a big additional devaluation of the ASEAN currencies or the Indian rupee that looks a bit climactic here, certainly for at least the short term. I think is one of the longer term themes, much more of a longer term theme rather than an immediate theme, is that the US dollar is an overall bottoming out support building. Well, it's beyond the bottoming out phase. It's in an overall base building phase, in a quite a mature base building phase. But I think we may have to get beyond this era of low growth. But certainly, when we get beyond, when we get back into a period of a stronger global economic growth, and remember, it's 5 years since, on average, since the last financial crisis ended, and we're thinking in terms of minimum 5 to 7 years, and for some countries, it could easily be 10 years or so before we get back to anything like normal growth. Now, when we are back in a normal, more normal growth environment overall, I think that's when we will see very clear evidence of a strong relative performance by the US dollar. And again, technology will be a big factor in that because the US has had a major incentive to keep the US currency low in recent decades. Because that's when we were more dependent on manual workers than technology. And manual workers in the United States were considerably more expensive than in developing companies. Well, that spread has narrowed considerably, and increasingly technology will make it all but irrelevant. And while every country can participate in that technology, the U.S. will be at the forefront of that move because it's developing most of those technologies. And other currencies that we will see also strengthen over time will be those of the most automated developing countries. But that's a very long-term forecast here. Now, looking at the commodity markets generally, and first let's take precious metals. And so many subscribers are interested in this sector. I think it has peaked. It will. It, I know it has peaked for at least the medium term. You can see that in the technical action on the charts. I suspect the evidence of this is not yet conclusive. We'd need to see a bigger pullback, and we haven't seen anything in the way of sharp downward dynamics. But I suspect that we have seen medium-term peaks. If you look at gold and silver, for instance, and those are the two most important of these precious metals. Silver had the better percentage rally, as it usually does. It's high beta gold, and it rallied right back up to the underside of its 200-day moving average, and also the underside of a big region of prior trading, and is now backing off from that pattern overall. If I've underestimated the degree to which not only the U.S. deteriorates, beg your pardon, not only the Middle East deteriorates, if I say that again, if I've underestimated the extent to which the Middle East deteriorates in addition to what we've already seen, I should say. And if oil prices spike, well, you can bet that we would get some temporary spikes in precious metals as well. But I think overall, the odds are, say, at least a short-term peak in these precious metals, probably a medium term peak, but I'm not sure about that yet because of the lack of clear dynamics. But I don't expect a retest of the lows. I would expect a partial retracement of the rallies off those lows and a right-hand base extension phase overall. That will be the next really good buying opportunity. In those precious metals, and my favorites for that would be gold and silver, and with platinum slightly behind. Industrial metals, well, it's going to take longer, and it's been a little bit disappointing in here. We've seen really in the last couple of weeks. We've seen some quite big pullbacks in those patterns overall, and they hadn't rallied sufficiently to significantly break that overall bear trend. I think that most of them will hold above their lows, but we're talking about slow global GDP growth, and that's not a big bull factor for these industrial metals over the short or even medium term. But I do think that they are in that overall process of building bigger base formations for the eventual recovery, which will occur in line with the eventual stronger growth as we move further out of the last problems created by the last financial crisis. And again, we're only in the fifth year. For some countries, it'll take 10 years. industrial metals on average should do better because I think China will do better over that period, and I also think that the United States will do better over that period, and so will Germany, and that will mean a number of other European economies as well. And in terms of food prices, well, it's hard to make really big strategic long-term forecasts on that because it's production that's the key variable, and that depends so much on what the actual weather conditions are right now. But the net overall important situation here is that while I think that the continuous commodity index that I often mention, that's got a major low here at the 500 level. You can see that chart CCI, in the library at any time, of course. And I think it's a support building above that 500 level. It will probably not move up quickly. It'll probably be a lengthy ranging process here overall. But certainly as global GDP growth picks up, this will become much stronger. And it could also be become stronger sooner if we were to have sufficiently adverse weather conditions to create crop problems. And folks, on that note, I'm going to draw this to a close. Thank you very much for your interest and attention. Have a fabulous weekend. All the very best to all of you.